good to be with you and to have this opportunity to join with you in worship of our God and King. I'm thankful again to be a part of a congregation that loves the Lord, loves the truth, and loves people. And I pray that we can continue to honor God in a way that is according to His Word, humbly, with the desire to help one another go to heaven. This morning we're going to have a lesson that is somewhat geared towards the younger people in our audience, though I hope that as we think about the great example of Daniel, we will all be encouraged. But when you look at the life of Daniel, it was really an incredible life. And I would say what we read about Daniel gives a good goal of what we should want for ourselves in our lives. We ask the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? That's probably something you've thought about if you're young. And maybe if you're not as young, maybe you're still thinking about it. We make goals for those sort of things. We make goals for where we might go to school. We make goals of what we might want for our family and what sort of job we might have. And I think it's good to talk to your parents and good to talk to people who you respect about those sort of aspirations and ask, how can I achieve those? But more important than asking the question, what do you want to be when you grow up, would be this question, who do you want to be? And what I mean by that is, what type of person do you want to be? Because it's more important that you grow to love God than whatever sort of job or occupation you may choose to spend much of your life doing. There's an old commercial that I saw growing up, and it showed a guy running. It looked like he was on maybe in a stadium, you know, running track or something. And in the background, you have a voice of a young child saying, "I want to be a track star." And if I remember right, there might be some other things that he says he wants to be. But at the end, you see the guy is actually running from the police, and he's being arrested for some reason, and the commercial says, no one ever says, I want to grow up to be a junkie. You know, and the message of the commercial is, the decisions you make now when you're young are going to affect who you ultimately come to be, and there are decisions that you can make now that will cause you to make a tremendous mess of your life. And the problem that we have as young people is we fail to connect how our current actions will affect where we end up tomorrow. And so you start deciding who you're going to be today. And a big part of your life and where you end up will be determined by the goals you make and the decisions you make today and how you work towards those goals. And what I want to encourage you this morning is to make spiritual goals. Make spiritual goals. Make goals to grow in the faith. Make goals to trust in Jesus, just like I believe Daniel did. Daniel is a person who I guess you could go to ask, how can I be successful in developing faith? Daniel is a good example because in the book that bears his name, we see that Daniel spent a lifetime developing his faith. He made a goal to serve the Lord when he was young, and he made decisions that helped him be an old man, solid in the faith, with a faith that would shut the mouths of lions. And so what we're going to do this morning is spend just a few minutes looking in Daniel chapter 6 and a few minutes looking in Daniel chapter 1. And we're going to do it from the perspective of what would Daniel tell us we need to hear in order to have the type of faith that shuts the mouths of lions. Now, in Daniel chapter 6, we have a king sort of setting up his hierarchy And there are all these different people being assigned different positions. And Daniel, because of his nobility and his capabilities, has success, and he's appointed over many. And because of his position, he is one who is held with contempt. And so some of his competitors want to devise a plan. Want to devise a plan to somehow get Daniel to get Daniel out of his position. And we read about that in verse 4. Then the commissioners and satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs, but they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful. And no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. And so here, the commissioners and satraps want to find something against Daniel. And I don't know how long they were having Daniel followed. You know, I don't know what sort of paper trail there might have been left at this time. But you can be assured that every process imaginable to find a flaw in someone, they were using. And they can't find negligence or corruption. You know, I wonder if these men were to just dedicate themselves to any politician in Washington today, how much negligence and corruption they might find. I'm sure plenty on plenty. But with Daniel, there's nothing. I wonder what they would have been able to find if Daniel had an iPhone. If they were able to look on some device where he's going, you know, and maybe have evidence of every website that he would have visited or every sort of transaction he would have made. I have no doubt that even if they had today's technology, as they would have tailed Daniel, they would have found nothing because he was faithful, because he did everything as he ought to have done. And so, as they're trying to think of how they can ruin Daniel, verse 5, they come up with their conclusion. Then these men said, "We will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God." That's the way we're going to get Daniel. If we can find something that relates to his devotion and commitment to the law of his God. And you see, these men knew in their following Daniel and their seeking after to find something wrong that Daniel had a love for God, that he had a devotion to God. And you couldn't know anything about Daniel without knowing about his commitment. And so in verses 6 through 9, we read of their scheme. They convinced the king to sign a law that basically states you can only petition him and no other god. And, you know, when they do this, they do it with flattery. They do it in a way that the king sort of sees this as maybe a consolidation of his power, a way to reflect that that you're going to submit to me. And they actually get him to agree that if someone violates this petition, they'll be cast in a den of lions. And so the king signs it into existence. And in verse 10, we read about how Daniel is going to respond to this injunction. Starting in verse 10, we read, "Now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously." And so here, Daniel knows of the injunction, knows that if he's caught, there's a cost to be paid. And Daniel is now going to find himself on his knees, as he always was, bowing and petitioning God. So he continues to pray. It's who Daniel was. Daniel was a man of prayer. And Daniel was going to petition God no matter what men might say or men might do. And so the men spy out Daniel. They had grown aware of his customs. In verse 11, we read, Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man beside you, O king, for 30 days, is to be cast into the lion's den? And the king replied, the statement is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. Then they answered and spoke before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petitions 3 times a day. And so here Daniel, he continues to pray. He's going to pray to God, and now they have brought it to the attention of the king. And the king, of course, is not going to undermine his own authority. He's not going to back down on his injunction. He is forced to act. And this is a problem to the king, because the king liked Daniel. And in verses 14 and 15, you read about how the king feels about this situation. It says, as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed. And so the king likes Daniel, but the law is the law. The authority of his rule is going to be seen in whether he's willing to enforce the very laws that he signs into existence. And so the king gives orders that Daniel be thrown into the lion's den. And in verse 16, he speaks to Daniel, saying, your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. And so the king, like the enemies of Daniel, knew of the type of faith that Daniel had. And, you know, that everyone who knew Daniel knew about Daniel's faith. And so he hopes that Daniel will be spared, will be delivered by God. He knows, perhaps, of Daniel speaking of previous times where God had delivered him. And the king, I think, genuinely hopes that he gets to witness the God of Daniel intervene and deliver him. So a stone is brought, Daniel's thrown into the den, and he is locked in the den for the night. Now in verse 19, we read of the king, and he arises at dawn. He gets up early in haste. He wants to see what has happened. You know, there's some sort of eagerness you see in the king. He fasted the night before, and now he wants to know. And in verse 20, we read, when he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? And so he asks. And Daniel spoke to the king. O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths. And they have not hardened me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him, and also toward you, O king. I have committed no crime. Then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the lion, out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he had trusted in God. And the king gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them, their children, and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. And so here you read the king sees, finds out he's relieved. Daniel's God has delivered him. And the king basically says, what you wanted from Daniel, I'm going to give to you. And tosses the enemies into the lion's den. He didn't want those people's help serving his kingdom, clearly. But the story is this. Daniel's faith in God caused God to deliver him from the den of lions. And I suppose there are a lot of attributes we can see in this account that are admirable about Daniel. You see courage. You see commitment. You see faithfulness and love and devotion to God. And you see a faith that shut the mouth of lions. It's interesting how Daniel says it. You know, he says what really is apparent to any of us as we read through the story. He says, my God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth. So why was Daniel standing there alive before the king? Well, because God saved him. And so really, it's simple. God saved him. And that's Daniel's perspective. I would be dead if it wasn't for God. Turn to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11. Maybe as we read in Hebrews 11, maybe what we're seeing here is God's perspective on it. From Daniel's perspective, well, I am saved by the power of God. And that's what his perspective needed to be. And then in Hebrews 11, we have what we often call the honor roll of faith. And Daniel isn't mentioned by name in this chapter, though he is mentioned. In verses 32 and 33, he begins to just sort of, you know, give a more synopsis over different examples of people who acted by faith. And he says, "Then what more shall I say, for time will fail me, if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions." And so, you know, from Daniel's perspective, God shut the mouths. From God's perspective, by faith, Daniel shut the mouths of lions. And, you know, it sort of, again, depends on how you look at it. If Daniel had, like, cowered at the injunction the king had signed, if Daniel had stopped to live by faith, would the mouths of lions have been shut that night? You know, he might not have even been thrown in the lion's den. But it was by Daniel's faith that he was in that position, he was in that predicament in the first place. And as God looked down at Daniel, it was by Daniel's faith that God was prompted to action to deliver Daniel. The God who Daniel trusted in saved him. Now, again, we understand it. It's God's power. It wasn't Daniel's power. It wasn't Daniel's strength. It was God's strength. But it was the faith of Daniel that shut the mouths of lions, according to Hebrews chapter 11. And so, what we see here in Daniel chapter 6 is Daniel had a faith that would shut, that could shut the mouths of lions. Daniel had a faith that in a completely fearful situation would result in the deliverance of God. And I hope that's the type of faith that you have, or it's at least the type of faith that you want to have. I guess it's probably kind of hard to really put yourself in the position of Daniel. None of us, even though we might have some level of persecution or reason to fear for a zealous faith, none of us have that sort of command or injunction hanging over our head. So maybe it's hard for us to really, truly put ourselves in that position. But I hope that's the type of faith that you want to have. And for those who are young, I want you to ask yourself, is that the type of faith that you want to grow to develop? How old was Daniel when this happened? You know, in many of our pictures, we might see a picture of a young boy in the den of the lions. But actually, Daniel was an old man. Daniel was at least in his 80s. The reason we know that is because Daniel was a part of the initial people taken from Jerusalem to the land of Babylon. And that happened approximately 605 B.C. And they were in Babylon for about 70 years. And at the end of 70 years, we have a new king, and that's a king that we read about in Daniel chapter 6, named Darius. And he is now reigning, so this is roughly 70 years later. And so that kind of might change your picture of what's happening a little bit, right? This isn't a young boy who doesn't really know what's going to happen if he decides to put his faith in God. Instead, it is an old man who has been tried and tested and found true. and who has spent a lifetime devoted to courageously serving God. And as he developed his faith over time, he developed a faith that would shut the mouths of lions. And I hope if you're young, that you look at an occasion like this and you would want to ask Daniel if you had a chance, how do I get there? How can I have a faith like that? And you know, there are people who are members here who you could speak to who could give you a lot of good guidelines, a lot of good tips on how to develop faith. And there is wisdom when young people are willing to ask people of faith who have fought battles for years, how did you get there? You know, how is it that you're still serving God as faithfully after all these years? What sort of challenges did you meet? Well, we're going to ask Daniel how he got there. I turn to Daniel chapter 1. So while Daniel 6 records an account of Daniel somewhere in his 80s, thereabouts, in Daniel chapter 1, we read about Daniel when he was a youth, when he was a young man. Most estimates would say he's around 13 to 16 years old. And so that's based upon the term youth. So Daniel 6, he's in his 80s. Daniel 1, he's somewhere around 13 to 16. Maybe you're in that age range. Maybe you're around that age. But here in Daniel chapter 1, we see the type of youth that he was that resulted in him developing a faith that would shut the mouths of lions. And so in verses 3 through 7, you read, again, Daniel is a part of this group that's been taken into captivity. And then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles, youths in whom was no defect, and were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered him to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. Then the king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Now among them from the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them, and to Daniel he assigned the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. And so here is the situation. Daniel and among a number of youths from Jerusalem have been taken from their homeland. And you know, really what's happening to them is the unthinkable. Their world has been shattered. You know, they've been stripped from their families. Everything that they have known and have understood in the past has been turned upside down. And they're living in a place where they don't speak the native language, their customs are different, and in fact, the Jewish way of life would be wrong and offensive to everyone there. We don't know how many young Jews were going to be faithful to the customs of the Jewish law. The only evidence we have among these youths is it's four. So an assumption I would make is that the majority of the other youths were going to go along with whatever Babylon told them to think and told them to do. But these four Jews are going to be faithful to God. Now, as they're in Babylon, they're basically being indoctrinated. Hananiah means God is gracious. He's given the name Shadrach, which honors some Babylonian god, I believe the god of Aku. Mishael means God will provide. Again, Jehovah, Yahweh, Elohim, the Jewish God. And he is given the name Meshach, which is another name honoring the god Aku. Azariah means God has helped. Yahweh has helped. He's given the name Abednego, servant of Nebo. Again, a different Babylonian god. Daniel's name means God is my judge. He's given the name Belteshazzar, which means Our Lady, protect the king. You see what they're doing? What Babylon is doing is they're saying, you're no longer Jews. I want you to forget your homeland, forget your family, and forget your God, and become a part of us. And so, what are they going to do? In verse 8, we read, but Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine with which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. So here we read Daniel. What did he do at this time? What did he do at this great, really, point of transition in his life? He is going to either make a stand or go along with the flow. And what he did here, chances are, was going to affect every decision that he would have made from here on out. I didn't have to, but likely that's how it would have played out. He was going to set a precedent. This is who I am. And what we read is what Daniel did is he made up his mind. He purposed in his heart. That is a great statement of personal resolve. And so, how do you build a faith that can shut the mouths of lions? You know, let's ask Daniel, what do you need to do to have the sort of faith that can shut the mouths of lions? I have no doubt Daniel will say, you need a purpose in your heart. You need to make up your mind today to refuse to defile yourself. And so Daniel refused to partake in what was defiling food. Daniel basically said to these people, you can take me from my home, you can take me from my family, but you cannot take me away from my God, and I am going to serve my God. How do you imagine people would have reacted to Daniel? You know, they're given a chance to partake of the finest food of Babylon, to drink of the best wine of the land. And maybe they could have seen Daniel's being ungrateful, right? Or what makes you think that you're such a big deal? Don't you realize that you're a part of a conquered people? You know, you're arrogant to refuse our delicacies that we're offering to you. But to Daniel, it did not matter. Now, the chief official over Daniel is worried he's going to forfeit his head if Daniel isn't progressing the way that those who are over him believe he should be progressing. But Daniel, to him, he struck up a deal. He said, this is what we're going to do, and so they're going to be tested. And the man listened to Daniel, and in verse 14, we read, so he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, their appearance seemed better, and they were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. And so here they are, sticking to their convictions. And God is going to see them through. So what would Daniel tell you? Daniel would tell you, you need to make up your mind. What else would Daniel tell you if you wanted to have a faith that would shut the mouths of lions? Here's another piece of advice I have no doubt Daniel would give you. Daniel would tell you that if you want a faith that will shut the mouths of lions, then you need to find peers with a similar faith. Peers to stand with. Peers to uphold. Peers to help you not be overwhelmed with the sense of being alone or like somehow stranded like on an island by yourself. Friends who, when you're struggling, will pray with you. Friends who will listen to the challenges that you are facing and give you godly counsel. Daniel, in Daniel chapter 6, for all we know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have passed on. Maybe not. Maybe they're just in some other region. Maybe they don't have the success that Daniel has, so there's not a target on their backs. But Daniel in chapter 6 is alone. But he can recall times where he was supported and he was encouraged. He had people who he prayed about. He had people who reinforced his conviction. And because of that, Daniel developed a faith that would shut the mouths of lions. And so, how can I develop that sort of faith? Well, develop a spiritual close bond with others who have a faith in the true and the living God. How important it is that you learn the value of support. Here's another piece of advice. What again was Daniel tempted to do? Daniel was tempted to eat a little food and drink a little wine. If we were to, you know, when the lawyer went to Jesus and said, what is the greatest command in the old law? You know, Jesus didn't say, well, eating unclean food. Not defiling yourself with wine. That wasn't Jesus' answer. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. You can think of maybe the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy. Don't commit idolatry. Have no other gods before me. And Daniel and the three friends in their situation, it's not like they're being asked to commit adultery, right? One of the big sins. I mean, what's really the big deal? It's just a little food. That could have been their approach. I imagine that's what a lot of the Jews did. They would go along with what Babylon was telling them to do. After all, it's not the bad sins. That could have easily been their approach. But what Daniel and his three friends purposed in their mind not to do was enjoy the diet of the king's palace. And to them, because it reflected the word of God, it was important to them. It would have been easy for them to say, my life is terrible right now, I might as well enjoy the good food. And who could blame me for this? I gotta eat. And what might happen if I make a stand in this sort of situation? Well, I could be put to death. That wouldn't be any good. But Daniel and his friends didn't just make up their mind to be faithful to God in the big things. They made up their mind to be faithful in God in what, at least in our mind, in our estimation, could have been a very small matter. Do I want to develop a faith that shuts the mouths of lions? I need to make up my mind not only to be faithful to God in the big things, but to be faithful in God in the little things. Finally, if I want to develop a faith that shuts the mouths of lions, I need to start today. Daniel's attitude from a young age was he was going to keep himself pure and remember who God was. Nothing that anybody could offer him, no penalty that anyone could enforce, would cause Daniel to violate his relationship with God. That was Daniel's approach from a young age. He resolved to do what was right, he resolved to stick to his conviction, and he knew that in that circumstance, and in every circumstance that followed, God would deliver. And so, who do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? What type of person do you want to be? As we've looked at Daniel, we've seen a story, an account from when he was young, an account from when he was old. Do you want to be a hero of faith like Daniel? Do you want faith like that? I hope that you do. If you want to be or have the faith of Daniel, if you want to be a Daniel, make up your mind today. Care about everything God has taught. Form relationships that are spiritually encouraging with peers who are your age. Pray to God with them. Have you ever prayed to God with your friends? I hope that you have. And in these ways, God can take your faith and do tremendous things. Well, thank you for your kind attention this morning. At this time, we're going to sing our song of encouragement, number 927. And we want to encourage you, if you are not a Christian this morning, to begin your walk of faith. The first step of faith that you're going to take in your walk with God is going to be in your obedience to the gospel. It needs to be a decision that you make. No one else can make it for you. It needs to be based upon your conviction of the true and the living God and of His Son, Jesus Christ. And if you will take that step of faith today, God will do great things with you. Are you willing to repent of your sins? Are you willing to confess His name? Will you be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of your sins?